We are on the air here. This is Thomas Robb with the Knights Party Roundtable Discussion.
And I'm Jason Robb.
Rachel Pendergraft.
Welcome all, everybody here.
Welcome all. It's July 17th. And here we are. Bright, sunny afternoon. Enjoying the day. Church is great. And now we're looking forward to a busy week, but not as busy as we'll be in Cleveland, I suspect.
Right. Well, before we get to Cleveland, what's on everyone's mind right now is the terrorist attack in France.
Right.
You know, Nice, France, where I guess 72, 76 people were killed.
I think they actually moved it up to 84.
Yeah, because I know a few days ago they said there was about 20 or 30 people that was actually on critical condition in the hospital on life support. So that number is probably going to increase. And then I think there was like 70 people that was injured.
Yeah.
So by the time all this is over, it could be potentially around 100 people.
Yeah, and ISIS has claimed that the terrorist was one of their frontline soldiers.
Soldiers.
Yes. So, of course, some reports I heard was that he was a Parisian. Anyway, he's one of their he's just a French citizen.
Well, of course.
One of their own.
Homegrown terrorists, just one of their own boys who went astray.
Well, and also, this is, this of course, what the news said, I haven't checked on it, but they said this is the seventh terrorist attack in France in the last 18 months.
Mm-hmm. And that's like one every month and a half.
Right. And so, surprisingly, that shows what happens when you're allowing more and more of your non-Frenchmen coming into France. You know,
right.
Your immigration issue. All comes back to immigration.
I bet they're wishing, some of them are wishing that Le Pen was in power.
Oh, absolutely.
National Front.
Yeah.
Or I guess they call it Front National over there.
Yeah.
But the, and that's going to add to the support of those who want to leave the European Union.
Absolutely.
Because there's a move in France to leave the European Union also, and follow the lead of England, and because without that, they're out of checked immigration. They can't control it.
Exactly.
Because some egghead in Brussels determines who can come and travel across the borders of Europe.
Well, and that was the biggest issue why England left the EU in the first place. Economics may have been part of it, obviously, but the main reason was immigration. And these terrorist attacks in France, that's going to propel that move in France to try to leave the EU and Spain and Germany. I mean, there's really getting a foothold in Europe where they're no longer wanting, like you said, Dad, Brussels to determine the immigration flow. And it's basically, it takes the individual countries prevents them from controlling their immigration policies. It prevents them from controlling their economic policies. And they're no longer a sovereign country. They're just basically a territorial land of the European Union. I mean, that's basically all it is.
And those people in Brussels who control them, I believe they're unelected officials, aren't they? I don't think they're elected.
Well, who knows? I don't know if it even really matters. They're internationalists. Basically, the corporate greed. They're looking at the bottom dollar. They're not looking at the welfare of the individual states and the citizens.
Or the bottom euro.
Or bottom euro. Yeah. And so that's what it comes down to. I mean, so everything always comes back to race. It always comes back to immigration. And even Donald Trump, yesterday, Saturday, when he was announcing Mike Pence as his vice president, he even commented that he had predicted, of course, this is Donald Trump saying he had predicted that England was going to leave the EU. But he even said that the reason England left the EU is because of the immigrants coming in.
Right.
The immigration. He didn't say because of economics. He basically said it was the immigrants coming in. And so that's what it's coming down to.
I know numbers. I know Bill O'Reilly made the same comment. We've been saying the same thing. Now,
absolutely.
You know, for a long time, that is what will drive the England to leave the EU will be the issue of immigration. And, of course, they try.
Maybe they've been listening to our show.
Maybe they have. I don't know. But it's not necessarily listening to our show, because wise people understand that mass unchecked immigration is not good or healthy for any nation.
Well, you know, I remember back in the early 80s, and I'm saying early 80s because I'm looking back at a time that I can remember as, you know, a young teenager and stuff. Back in the early 80s, where, you know, traveling with you to different conferences or rallies, lots of press conferences, you know, doing press conference blitzes, you know, city to city, with interviews and press conferences out, you know, in front of a courthouse somewhere, things like that, and talking about, you know, what the repercussions of unchecked immigration here and Canada and also over in Europe and people, you know, sometimes people at the time, you know, maybe a news person or a local politician or something that, you know, they just do, oh, well, there's the Klan. They're just trying to use, you know, they're over the black thing. Now they're just trying to use immigration as a way to try to stir up trouble, you know, oh, there's the Klan, talk about immigration again, blah, 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 nobody cares, blah, blah, it's the Klan, talk about immigration, nobody cares, and here we are, you know, 30-something years later, and it's the number one issue that everybody around the world is talking about, from Donald Trump to Bill O'Reilly to everybody, they're talking about the problems of unchecked immigration, and so, thank goodness they're catching up.
Absolutely. Well, you know, and the thing is that this issue of immigration has been on the agenda for years, and there has been people been aware of it. And I can...
Because extreme groups like, you know, they call us extremists. You know, we're not extremists as in, like, violence, but we do have an extreme position. And extreme positions do drive the narrative of national politics. So when people say, oh, well, you know, what's your point? What's your success? What have you actually accomplished? Extreme groups and viewpoints and statements and all the stuff that it does help drive the national narrative of the political arena. And I think that's something that people need to keep in mind.
Well, what I started to say is Jell O.K. Smith, I've got issues with publication going back in 1952.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's 65 years ago.
Right.
Long before anybody even heard the word immigration.
Right.
You know, I'm being facetious. And he was saying back in 1952, saying that there are efforts to change our immigration law,
mm-hmm,
and then begin dumping third world people into our nation, mm-hmm, so they can seize control of the national politics of the country, reduce the white Christian voting bloc, and eventually vote white Christians out of power. He said this in 1952. 15 years later, 1965, or 13 years later, 1965, the immigration law was passed. By 1970, began to dumping non-whites into our country. Today, the non-white flood come to our country at an alarming rate, and white Christians no longer or have very little power in this country today. Exactly as Jell O.K. Smith was predicting 65 years ago, as well as many others were saying, mm-hmm, 65 years ago. I know we were talking about it as I began growing up. I remember Hubert Humphrey, when he ran for president, that's going back in the, he was a senator from Minnesota. He was just going back in sometime in the late 60s. He was working for massive non-white immigration. Everybody thought we were extremists. We got involved with the Klan, with David Duke, and we were carrying the same theme, build a wall on our border, stop our immigration, stop the flood into our country. And everybody said, hey, man, we had a Klan as a being extremist, but they're off the wall, we can't be that way, can't be hateful. America has to open doors for everybody. And then now they've opened the doors, and now we have this alarming situation happening, not just in the realm of terrorism, but our whole culture is being totally eroded and corrupted and we're having this being dumped on us, and people being scratch their heads and wondering, well, when did this happen? Well, it began years ago, and
right.
Donald Trump is carrying the narrative. But Donald Trump, much as we might like Donald Trump, he just saying now what others have been saying for 40, 50 years.
Yeah, he's 70 years old, so he's grown up in his lifetime. He has seen the America that he knew as a young child. He's seen it drastically turn dark, you know. And so, you know, he sees it, and he's gonna try to, you know, work with all, you know, I'm using my quote hands right now, all people groups and so forth, and as any politician is going to do, and white people do try to get along with people, but he knows that what is at stake, I think, is the traditional America that he most likely knew as a young child, and that it's disappearing very quickly.
And besides that, not only you see America, but you then just see all of Europe. I mean, all your traditional white countries are under attack.
Right.
And not just physical attack, just being attacked by, being invaded by immigrants, you know, who are wanting to change it. So,
right. We have, like, what, 5 schools in London that have not one white student in them?
Right.
Just in London? I mean, when we were over there, I forget what city it was in down in Wales, actually, and we were
Cardiff,
and we were walking. I don't know. We were looking for grocery store or something. Anyway, yeah. we were just Muslims. I mean, with not just
Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, with the things on their faces,
the black trash bags,
the burqa things, and all that type of stuff. And I mean, it was. Not just a scattering. I mean, it was like you were in a totally different country.
Yeah. I mean, we drove and literally.
It was so shocking.
Right.
Yeah, just very shocking.
And so that's why you see all these immigrants coming in. And not only do you see the immigrants, then you see the so-called refugees, and you got the illegals, and you got the legals.
And they're all invaders.
Yeah, and they're all invaders. And they're changing the morals and the cultural society of the United States and our European sister countries.
And they know they're invaders, too.
They look at it as invasion.
Yeah, they look at it as invasion. It doesn't matter what country they're from, whether they're from an Islamic state, whether they're from India, they're, you know, Hindu, or whether they're Buddhist, or whether they're from the Sudan. I mean, it doesn't matter. They all consider themselves as, they know that they're invading, and then they consider themselves as invaders.
Yeah, look at themselves coming in.
I mean, they're national leaders.
Change.
Their national leaders have called it an invasion. You know, they don't need guns. They don't need this. You know, I mean, some of them do use that, but they don't need those things to take over a country. They just need to go there, multiply, and replace the population where they're.
And that's why. And that's why I get angry, I guess, perhaps, when I hear some news commentators talk about, well, you know, we got these, many of them are peaceful. Many of them are peaceful, so we should not have negative feelings towards the peaceful ones, because they're not all terrorists. Most Muslims are peaceful. And that's a lot of trash, you know? You can be a peaceful terrorist by taking over your community, taking over your culture, and destroying your homeland, and destroying your values, destroying Western civilization. You know, they have the same agenda. Just like Martin Luther King, they talk about, well, Martin Luther King would be angered and upset by Black Lives Matter because he was a peaceful man. He was promoting the same agenda. That's the point. The agenda was to displace white people in America and reduce our power and influence. And his agenda was to do it in a peaceful way so people would be more or less be more accepting to it, and unfortunately,
get
it worked. Pardon?
Get suckered into it.
Right. That's why, as much as I might like Donald Trump or Mike Pence, you know, and you know, Mike Pence mentioned yesterday morning at the press conference. He said one of his heroes was Martin Luther King. Really? Right. Come on.
Yeah. And here's a guy who's a known communist. His agenda was to change the racial makeup of the United States. Yeah.
He admired known communists.
If he was such a great man, why is his records, FBI records, sealed until 2027?
Yeah. He said Vietnam soldiers in Vietnam were like worse than Nazis, you know, and so.
Well, again, I'll get back for a second on this Muslim deal, this invasion, because a lot of, you know, people like us, you know, just average middle-class white people who are maybe aware of the issues and so forth, they'll look at these alien people who are coming in, being peaceful, multiplying, beginning to dominate communities, slowly changing the society to reflect their own people. And, you know, we say, you know, rightfully we're going to say, oh, that's terrible, that's wrong, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, they're doing what their faith requires them to do. That's what their faith requires, is to subdue and dominate, you know. And so that's what they're doing. And, you know, while we're outraged because we don't want that faith, we don't want their laws, their religion, and so forth to dominate in our society, I mean, that's what Christians are supposed to do, and Christians are being invaded because they've refused to do what their faith requires them to do, which is to multiply, build families, and dominate in your communities and set the tone for the culture and the fabric of your society and the religious tones, because all these politicians that mouth all their trash off, they're able to do that because the preachers aren't setting the tone and the people in the congregations and communities don't require the preachers to set the tone. And so it all comes back to, you know, yeah, rightly being upset with what all these alien people are doing, but they're doing what their faith says. White people need to do what our faith says.
Right.
And if we want to rule our own society and our own culture and have it to benefit our families and reflect our traditions and our way of life, then get up and, you know,
Take a stand
in your community.
Right.
You know, stop limiting yourself to, oh, maybe I might have one or two kids by the time I'm 40 if I feel like it, you know. Yeah. And I'm worried about, you know, all the, yeah, economics is important, but, you know, I can only have one kid because I might not be able to have a boat then. Or just, you know, you let the money get in the way of the building up of your families. And people, you know, I know we kind of laugh sometimes. The Mexican, you know, we've seen it over in western Arkansas and, of course, in the Southwest and in Chicago and stuff. We see the Mexicans and so forth coming up from Mexico or coming up from El Salvador, those, you know, Central America. And then they come in, you might have three or four families living in a house, and they're all out there working jobs, pulling their resources, and then pretty soon they got another house, and then they've got the whole freaking neighborhood. You know, and yeah, that's not our way of life and our traditions, but they're putting their goal of dominating a community ahead of their economics. And white people, I mean, come on.
Well, you know, I've always said that one of the greatest shortcomings, or sometimes I use a phrase, maybe our shortest handicap, or perhaps a genetic defect, is our compassion. And I'm being somewhat, you know, I'm being facetious when I say
genetic defect. It depends on how it's directed.
Correct. But our compassion, white people have a sense of compassion that I do not believe other races have, certainly not evident in other races. We have a sense of compassion. And much as we are angry with what's happening with the Muslims, I cannot see any white person, no matter how angry he is with the Muslim, just get in a truck and just drive down the street mowing down Muslim people sitting on the street.
Right.
I can't see that. They don't want to get rid of them. They want to maybe contain them, deport them. And so, but just driving down the street and killing a bunch of them, I cannot see a white person doing that.
Right.
And so we have an extreme sense of compassion. We feel sorry for everything. And so they can throw on the television set a little black child in Africa, he's hungry, or a little Arab child, or they can whatever images they want to use, and white people are so easily manipulated, and the compassion is so easily manipulated that we end up having more compassion towards the enemies of our own race than we do for our own people, our own children, in America. You know, they talk about here the invasion of the Mexicans coming to this country here. They don't use that phrase. Okay, the immigrants come to the country. And then somebody like Donald Trump or us, we've been saying this for years, say we need to deport them. They'll say, well, you're not going to be able to deport 11 million Mexicans. Well, yeah, you can. Don't say you can't. Sure you can. You just begin. And
one neighborhood at a time.
One state at a time. And they'll deport themselves.
Right. You'll have laws of self-deportation.
Right. But they always say, oh, what about the little children? What about the little children?
Well, then they can go with their parents.
Yeah. Well, what about our children? Right. Where's the compassion for our children? Our little children, our little babies, our little boys, our little girls, the safety of them when going to the schools, their future, their heritage, their culture. What about our people? Let's have some compassion for our children, our little ones. And so always being driven by the guilt that, oh, the compassion, poor little Mexican child, who was born here in America. It's not his fault he was born here. His mom and dad might have broke the law. They might have come here illegally. But little Juan Dez, he doesn't know. He was just born here. And he's an American. You know, and so it would not be fair to send a mom and dad home and split up the family. Well, what makes you think that's going to split up the family? That's not going to split up the family. Mom and dad are deported. If they want to leave their little baby behind, then they're not very good moms and dads. And or if a child at 10, 12 years old and doesn't want to go, well, what's wrong with that? I mean, they can leave.
It's not constitutional for him to be a citizen anyway.
Yeah. Correct.
Get the hell out.
Right. Yeah. But what, again, where's compassion? Where's compassion for our children, our little babies? Where's compassion for them? For the most part, you never hear about that. It seems like there's no room to have compassion for our people, because we're filled up with compassion for little Mexican children or little Arab children who are caught in this dilemma that they had no, were
well,
told
that,
had no
and
choice.
That has always been the agenda. The agenda is the non-whites, regardless of what class you want to look at, the non-whites are the victims. White people are the oppressors. And so it doesn't matter. Mexicans are the victims. Queers are victims. Everyone's the victim. And so simply having a why we can't deport the Mexicans because they're the victims. They're just here to seek a better life. What's so wrong with that? You know? And so it's that victimhood status. And we've been ingrained in our mind from little up that they are always the victims. That's what's being taught in your public schools.
But these people say that they're hypocrites.
I agree.
Because they don't open their doors. They want you to open up your neighborhood, but they live in a gated community.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. But that's the status. They want to be considered the victims. And but like I said, you know, from your public schools, even your churches, they're always the victims. You know, and white people are the oppressors.
We're the oppressors. Right. Well, I like what you said last week, Jason. There's three stages in American history. Because American history is not taught in schools any longer. Not the way it was when I was a child. Kind of skipped over. The three stages in American history are stage number one, white Europeans came to America and they stole the land from the Indians. Next stage of American history is white people enslaved black people and held them in bondage. And the last stage in the Civil Rights Movement, in which black people tried to get freedom, work for freedom, but the white people rose up in anger against them and tried to oppress them even further. But then the black people, by their bravery and by their courage,
liberated all.
Yeah. And now we all can be free.
We've never really been a free country until the 60s.
No.
Until the Civil Rights era. That's when we really had actually.
Garth Brooks sang about that in a stupid song.
Right.
What was the name of that song? Remember?
Who knows? He's
a
weirdo anyway.
He's trashed. You know, but the thing
is, Sifter's a lesbian, and he's been on the LGBT bandwagon for a good 20 years. He spoke to the UN about it long, long time ago about, you know, homosexual rights and whatever. They're all...
Yeah. But the point I'm getting at, I mean, I'm aware of that, but the point I'm getting at is, where did he get his money from? Good old white boys and girls sitting at home, the rednecks, oh, I love Garth Brooks, oh, and they buy up his music and listen to that trash that he, I mean, he's a good entertainer, he's a good singer, he puts a lot of good music, but he puts that trash in there, and people listen to that, and just more ways to absorb that anti-white sentiment that permeates so much in our society today. And people don't, so many people don't even see it, don't even feel it. Totally out of where that's even there.
It's just like the TV preachers that you talk about, Dad. It's, you know, they cloak the negative with all this good stuff, like Duck Dynasty, you know? And I'm not like a big watcher of it, but I've seen it a few times, but the Granddaddy Duck guy, you know, whatever his name is, you know, he came out against gay marriage, and oh, he took a stand and so forth. But then you got the younger ones that's been down at Hendricks College here in Arkansas talking about, you know, white guilt and interracial non-white kids, you know, adopted and so forth. So, yeah, wholesome, good old-fashioned family values, helping to commit white genocide, you know.
Right. Yeah. The two great sins in America today are race mixing and sodomy. Those are the two great sins, and the churches, for the most part, have already accepted race mixing. They've accepted it.
Like a badge of honor.
Absolutely. Every church is a multiracial church, and if you stand up against it, you are a racist and certainly not going to be invited to the ministerial conferences and so on.
So you get to go to the fancy breakfast.
Yeah. But, you know, back in, and I've made a reference to this numerous times, and I think you all have done your writing speeches also. Back in 1959, the Dallas Morning newspaper ran a full-page I'll call it an advertisement. They weren't selling anything, but like a public statement, in which over 300, close 358 or something like that, ministers in the Dallas and Fort Worth area, that's a lot of ministers. One of the people's, well, first off, 358 ministers in the Dallas and Fort Worth area signed a petition, well, not a petition, but a public statement, saying that they believe that integration of the black and white children, because that was the only issue at the time. We weren't flooded with Arabs. We weren't being flooded with Mexicans. Only a 2% Mexican population in Texas in the 1950s. So the only issues of race did involve white and black. And they believed the integration of white and black children was a sin, a moral sin. And 358 ministers signed that petition from the Dallas and Fort Worth area. Now, I actually know one of the ministers who signed that petition, and they were John Lovell, and he was the pastor of First Covenant Church in Dallas, Texas. And he signed that petition. He's been dead for many years now. Petition statement. But 358 ministers in 1959, and yet you probably could not find 358 ministers in the entire country today who would be willing to make the same public statement. They would be afraid to do it. Now, I'm not saying there's not 358 ministers out there believe that way or feel that way, but for the most part they're afraid, they're intimidated, and they're forced into silence.
Right, and unfortunately some of those who probably are opposed to it, you know, because it's the old, well, you know, it's I'm not for it because it's hard on the kids, and it's, you know, it's, it puts a strain on the marriage, and so
it's not a marriage.
Yeah,
any more than two queers.
It's not culturally acceptable, so it's hard. But to come right down and say it is a sin,
it's an abomination.
It's an abomination of God. It's fornication. They won't admit that.
Right.
And
like you said, first off, they say it's hard on the kids. Well, first off, the kids are not white, you know. And to say it's hard on the kids, that's not true. I mean, there's no hardship on biracial children in America.
Absolutely not.
I'm just saying it's hard on the kids. If you believe it really is hard on the kids, then you're applying that they're having some psychological, emotional battle going on there because they know that they're not a natural born person, that they are born from two different worlds. And so there might be some inner trauma going on. But as far as the world's acceptance, this evil world's acceptance of biracial children, they're fully accepted. So number one, it's not hard on the kids. When they say it's hard on the kids, they're lying. It is not hard on the kids as far as being accepted by the world. And then they say they're hard on marriage. Well, first off, it's not a marriage any more than two guys getting together and being married. The only marriage is a marriage sanctioned by God. If it's not sanctioned by God, then I don't care what you call it.
Right.
It's not a marriage.
And, you know? it has to be kind after kind. So
yeah.
A mixed race, there is no such thing as a mixed race marriage.
Absolutely.
Right.
You know, if you want to be like saying, well, I want to marry a golfer. Well, you can, you know, it doesn't make it a marriage. You know, I'm being extreme. But, I mean, marriage is not between one man and one woman. That's a marriage. And it's between other kind after kind. And so it's not a marriage any more than two guys getting together and they're calling that a marriage, say. They're calling it a marriage, but it's not a marriage.
Right.
But anyway, 358 ministers in Dallas-Fort Worth, and now we're here today where you would not find 358 ministers in Dallas and Fort Worth. I'd be surprised if you could find 1% of that number.
Yeah. I doubt you even could find 20.
Yeah.
You know, the publicly, but I will say that we see, you know, all this negativity, you know, and all that. But of course, Rachel, your famous line is the upside of white genocide.
Yeah,
and I really like that phrase because even though we see all this negative, we see this massive immigration coming in and our destruction of our homeland, our morals. At the same time, it is forcing white people to recognize themselves as a race.
Right.
It is forcing themselves to recognize that they did have a beautiful culture and a beautiful heritage. And it's forcing white people to almost take a stand, to draw that line in the sand and basically say, which side are you going to stand on? And that is the upside of white genocide, because white people are starting to realize, because they can see it right in front of them. I mean, we, like I said, we've been saying this for 30, 40, 50 years. Other people have been saying it before that. And at that time, United States, 92, 95% white, Christian country, and people like, you guys are just crazy. And now, we're saying it, and they're not calling us crazy anymore. Now they're saying, you're right.
Yeah.
They're here.
They're voting for a candidate,
right,
who's saying that publicly.
Exactly. And so white people are starting. It may not be as fast as we want, but I dare to say that you will see it.
It's a slow, deep simmer.
Right. Yes. And
it's not to the conclusion they need to reach either.
Right. No. Donald Trump is not the answer.
Right.
But it is the narrative. It is forcing people to talk about those issues. It is forcing white people to start taking a stand. We are seeing this balkanization of what we've been calling of America, where white people are starting to look at themselves as a race, as a culture, everything in politics. They're forcing themselves to have to look at those issues where before they never did.
Right.
And that is a good thing. And that is something that we need.
And we've been talking about balkanization for a number of years now. And you know, I'm going to make a prediction. Just listen to the news. And over the next 3 to 4 or 5 years, you're going to start hearing that word on television.
Yes.
I heard it the other day. I was shocked here about 4 or 5 days ago, the Fox News, and I was doing some work, so I really wasn't listening to the news, to the commentary. I wasn't really listening to them. Then all of a sudden I heard the fellow says, and what we're seeing is increased balkanization. And I thought, wow. You know,
right.
I mean, it is a word, but you don't hear it on TV because it means gathering of people together who are of like mind, like faith, like racial, same racial background.
Right.
It's people gathering together who are similar together. In other words, it's a basic anti-diversity. And I was surprised.
Well, the term came about And I know we started using the term after Yugoslavia broke down and they split into the three different countries, the Balkan Islands, so forth, and they had been forced together into Yugoslavia, and then they were able to then retreat back into their own ethnic nations and language and traditions and so forth. And so, you know, that was, you know, kind of representative of what is we felt was happening here in this country as people started moving into more rural areas, white people, you know, beginning to white flight, you know, Balkanization and so forth, perfect example of it. And so it's something that it's a term that is becoming recognizable by the mainstream.
And the thing is that this is happening naturally, organically. Some of it's forced on, but it's really white people are going back to their roots of regathering. And we've been talking about, or in the past we've talked about, Donald Trump and others, in politics talking about what we've been talking about. Mm-hmm. And I am convinced, especially with the internet, with the social media, I am convinced that there are people in politics, in government, may not be Donald Trump himself, but there are people.
He's got his advisors.
Advisors. They do get on websites, your so-called extreme websites, and now I'm doing the quote with my hands, of the Klan or racial politics. They get on these websites. And they are looking to see what we are saying.
Well, because we know Donald Trump has retweeted a couple of things from White National's website.
Because they look at that. Because they look at that and they see. We're always thinking about race.
Well, we see in our tracking, we see IP addresses coming out of congressional offices.
Absolutely.
Out of government buildings. Out of different places that important people
universities
are living. You know, so they are looking. I don't like the word monitoring, because that implies keeping track. They're watching and testing the tone of society, looking at what people are saying. And, because extreme politics does drive the national, because then they try to back it up a tad and try to find a slightly middle of the road type position. But extreme politics always sets the narrative for the national narrative. Of any political debate. And so they, they are watching what we're saying and they're mm-hmm. listening.
And that's why, I will say that that's on both sides.
Right.
I mean, you even look at the so-called Black Lives Matter, for example, mm-hmm. But ultimately they're extremists.
Right.
They're communistic. They're wanting to totally not only isolate, but annihilate white Christians.
Mm-hmm.
They say that, and they're promoting that, and you're seeing their politicians promoting that.
Right.
You're seeing people like Hillary Clinton, who basically says white people needs to apologize to the blacks, that every white person out there are racist.
Yeah.
And so they're carrying the tone of the extremists. And so the fact is. You get these people, in government and the politicians, the newspaper media, and all
educators,
that
educators and the big universities.
They're looking at our websites. They're looking to see what we are saying because they know that we don't put our finger in the wind and start thinking, oh, what's the shifting and the change
we're
of the
people directing this.
Yeah,
change.
We have a certain beliefs. We have an agenda and. We're not going to deviate from that at all.
Right.
And they know that. And so when they see what we're writing, they're going to tweak it a little bit. But they're going to say, those people have good points. That's what we need to be pushing.
Well, one example is we, and I say we, I'm talking about the Knights, but other white Christian patriotic groups, have for years, one of the code words or slogans or things that we talk about is we need to have an America First policy.
Right.
We need to have America First policy. America First. America First. We talked about white nationalist groups going back for 25, 30, 40, 50 years. America first, America first, America first. Now what happened? Donald Trump comes up here about 3 weeks ago, and he said, America first.
Yeah.
And people, But Donald Trump didn't originate that. It originated out of the white nationalist movement.
Exactly. Right. All my policies is going to be directed as American first. If it's advantage for America, we're going to do it.
If it's not for America, then we're going to
do it. If it's not, we're not going to do it.
That's something we have been saying for years. I mean,
how many America first headlines have we printed over here? How many America first speeches or America first press conferences have there been done over the years?
No, we couldn't count them.
No. Yeah. So,
Donald Trump is saying America first. Somebody is hearing that message.
Right.
Absolutely.
You know.
Right.
And
well, that's what makes our new show. We're doing a live broadcast on White Pride TV at 8 o'clock Monday through Friday, called the White Resistance News, and really we did our first week this past week, and we're still tweaking it some. They're over there today.
Yeah, Scott working
on the set a little bit more today, and because we consider it our duty to present the very best, knowing that we can't compete monetarily with the big newscasters and sets and stuff like that. But we're going to do the very...
Not yet.
Exactly. But we're going to do the very best we can to represent our people well. Because our people deserve to be represented. And our people deserve to have their voice known. And our people deserve... Those little kids out there, you can sit and, gripe about maybe what some of the moms and dads do, or they don't, have the compassion for their kid. All these different variables and so forth. But the kids out there who are not of age and do not have the ability to make, really have any decision-making ability in their lives, they at least deserve to have the very best spoken on their behalf. And so I'm really excited about, our new, we've done, This is the Klan for 17 years. This is our 18th. We changed the name to White Resistance News. Because, this is the resistance, and we feel that we represent the vast majority of white, racially conscious people in America, with our common sense approach, ability to work with the media, ability to get across with a meaningful dialogue with people. And so, I'm just really, really psyched about the show.
Well, it's held at the... Christian Revival Center, mm-hmm. a beautiful church grounds, really the epic center, as we like to call it, of all the activities that goes on. It's really spearheaded here, mm-hmm. at the Christian Revival Center. And we have been getting a lot of great feedback. We've right. always had great feedback from the show, but now since we've changed it to White Resistance News, that is something that is also going to generate a lot of interest, because right. there really is no other organizations that are doing that or right. that have the capability.
And every day live.
Right, and then later.
So we're going to keep the topless news better.
Right, and then available on demand later. And, it's 18 years. While there are still people out there trying to figure out what the internet was or how to put up a website, we had already had a website on for several years and began doing live and doing video news programs and videos for white people on the internet 18 years ago.
We've been broadcasting.
That's a long time. Most people are still just doing audio, or they will film something and put it up on YouTube. But we've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah, we've been broadcasting church live for over 10 years, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't it
right? 2000 the Christian Revival Center.
Correct,
right.
Christian Revival Center. Wasn't 2006 we began
yes.
live broadcast of that?
Mm-hmm.
And for the Christian Revival Center, Night's Party, and we do the live broadcast Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. And like you said, Eastern Time, 7 o'clock Central Time, and then it's an archive at.
That's for the other program we haven't actually mentioned yet. That's for Wake Up America. So we're doing Wake Up America at 7 o'clock, and then we're doing
right.
White
okay.
Resistance News at 8 o'clock.
Correct.
both of them live, and then available for on demand, and then the audio on KKK Radio, which has a great listing of original programming. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and
never-ending voice, a white Christian America. Right.
And of course, we we talk about we talk about not able to. I don't want to say compete, but with obviously monetarily, with these
Fox News,
NBC, ABC. Yes, obviously that's true, but that's what's so powerful with the internet, because those listeners and those people that are viewers of those shows are dwindling. Because the new generations that are growing up, they don't watch those. They don't come home and say, 5:30, we're going to watch this.
Right.
They're getting on their iPods and
their internet-based
phones, right, and everything. And so people can just click on and watch it at any time. And that is what the enemy fears.
Right.
When they have instant access to what we call white Christian revival,
right,
that's what they are afraid of. And for years and decades, they have been able to contain the news to their own agenda.
Well, yeah,
and
three major networks.
Right, and they're not able to do that anymore.
ABC, NBC, CBS, they control the television news. Then you had a major newspaper owned by the Samuel Newhouse family. They controlled the major newspapers in the country. They had it locked up. And they were able to destroy or politicians, or create politicians, or create heroes, or destroy what people should be heroes by a few moments on a television screen. They lost that power. The internet changes everything.
Thank you, Al Gore.
Yeah. Well, for those who don't remember, Al Gore claimed he invented the internet.
Yeah.
And then after everybody made fun of him for doing so, because he didn't. But I guess in some illusionary dream he had, he created the internet.
Who knows?
And just like Hillary Clinton said that she was named after Sir Edmund Hillary when she was speaking in New Zealand,
right,
a number of years ago now, when she ran for president, I think maybe longer than that. But anyway, she was speaking New Zealand, and she said, in order to kind of get herself
Common ground.
Common ground with the New Zealand people, she said, I was named after Sir Edmund Hillary. And everybody got excited and so forth. Then I found out that she was named, but she was born like 10 years before Sir Edmund Hillary was even
a notable person.
He hadn't done anything, and long before he climbed Mount Everest. Sir Edmund Hillary, for those who don't know, was the first man to climb to the summit of Mount Everest. So he became a national world hero, icon. He's the first man to climb to the summit of Mount Everest. But the point is, he didn't do that until like 10 years after Hillary Clinton was born. And so anyway, that's just another one of her lies.
Right. Well, this is like way off of all topic, but it's just kind of interesting, so I thought I'd bring it up. But I like watching like TV and news about tech stuff. I get Popular Mechanics magazine, and my son likes looking at it and stuff. And they've always got all types of cool articles in there about neat gizmos that are being invented and new technology and so forth. But the first round-the-trip solar-powered flight was just finished here a few days ago.
Round the what?
Round the world solar-powered airplane.
Okay, you said round the trip.
A round the world trip.
Okay.
First solar-powered round the world trip airplane that just finished here a few days ago. And I think that was kind of neat, because it shows, this group of white people, white people are just always trying to advance, always trying to find solutions to problems. It's one of the things, people talk about the noble savage who just, he's in a forest and he just eats the berries and
lives a simple life
and gathers and just is in tune with nature, where white people come through and mow it down and fit it to make it to work for them, And well, yeah, they do. they subdue and they make nature, they appreciate nature. White people are always the ones on the forefront of of anti-pollution and trying to find good ways to help the environment and clean up lakes and streams, and make sure people have good drinking water and clean water wells in Africa.
Well, even Queen Isabella of Columbus frame, King Ferdinand, Queen Isabella, she was big into various programs, reforestation
right.
of areas in France and not France, Spain.
Right,
and she was kind of like a forerunner of the whole environmental movement. That's 500 years ago.
Yeah, and people don't think about that. You know, there's, you know, yeah, trying to reforest areas. And so, you know, white people are just, you know, and I know you can look around and you see a lot of Asians involved in the technology field today. But Asians are, for the most part, innovators. They take something that's already been created or invented, and they innovate it, they improve upon it, they have that ability. And I'm not saying there's not, you know, smart people in other races, but the genius, I guess you could say, the nucleus of creativity, of of harnessing nature, of making it work for mankind instead of mankind succumbing to nature, comes out of white people. And so, you know, I just find technology.
And the same thing, sure. We see the examples I like to talk about is our Western states.
Mm-hmm.
But for thousands and millenniums of years, our Western states were nothing but stubble grass and horny toes and cactus
right.
and rock on the ground. And people thought it useless. Even great American patriots who lived back in the 1800s looked upon our Western states as being totally worthless and useless. Same thing with Alaska. Who
right.
wants Alaska? I mean, Alaska has no value, you know?
Yeah.
And yet white people moved into the Western states, and within a generation, land that was under the moccasins of the Indians that had produced nothing but horny toads and stubble grass for thousands and thousands of years, within a generation.
Shipping crops nationwide.
Yeah. White people were pumping up millions of gallons of water out of the ground, irrigating vast numbers of acres, producing multitude of tons
and they
of
picked
crops,
their own grapes
shipping
and
them around
strawberries.
The world. Yes,
they picked their own fruit.
Right. So you know, we have a lot in our race to be proud of, and something really worth preserving, and something really worth loving. And it's sad when you see children who are growing without appreciation of the sacrifices our forefathers have done.
Right,
and
absolutely.
Performed to give us what we have today.
Right, well, and that, you know, that's why, I know we just have a few minutes left, but, you know, that's why it's important for families to network together, to work together, and one of the best places they can do that are at our conferences, and we've got the Knights Party Leadership and Family Conference coming up on Labor Day weekend. I believe that's 2, 3, and 4 of September. And it's going to begin with the meet and greet Friday evening around 5, 6 o'clock. It's going to go all day Saturday and all day Sunday. It's here at the Christian Revival Center. It's we don't have the word retreat in it, but it's kind of like a retreat. It's beautiful water features and nice trees and
relaxing countryside,
relaxing area, beautiful atmosphere, nice, you know,
manicured
conference
lawns
center.
And walking areas, and
right?
Tables and just beautiful lighted hillside, and
just a really, really nice, comfortable, relaxing time, but also with a lot of hard hitting information, workshops, good, patriotic, white Christian resistance type music, good food, a lot of fellowship, just a fantastic weekend. And, you know, just really encourage people to make plans to attend that. They can go to kkk.com and register online, or they can email us at nationaloffice@theknightsparty.com if they want to get some more information. Or call us during regular office hours, Monday through Friday, at 870-427-3414. But it's open to all concerned white patriots and their families. And you don't have to be a member of the Knights. You can be a guest of the National Office, so you're welcome to attend. But I always have a great time. I love seeing all the young people and the children that are in attendance, the young families, the old timers that are coming, that are around, you know, asking each other what's been up since I seen you last, and just a really nice time for white people to gather and get information, be entertained, kind of rejuvenate their soul and spirit.
Well, it's nice for these people, some of these people who maybe they feel trapped in some of your cities and so on, and to come and just kind of realize that there is something positive happening.
Right.
There is something positive happening that their children are going to benefit from, and they can be a part of it. And
that's why it's important for them to bring their children, because one of the best things I love seeing is just seeing all the children out there playing and
making noise.
Or hiking and,
and making noise.
Yeah, making noise and hiking and stuff like that. But they're being surrounding themselves with other people that have the same love and concern about their future. And it is a family event.
You kids have lots children. Of fun with all the crafts and white history lessons and you know, programs designed just for them. And so it's a fantastic time. The only one like it in the country.
Yeah, so don't hesitate. Go back to the website and get in there and register. Give us a call. And we had a fellow come up last for our Faith and Freedom Conference in April. He came up here from Alabama. I wish I would have brought my kids. he was old. He really looked like he was going to cry. Not literally, you know, but he did like, I wish I would have brought my kids.
Yeah, he said, you said not to leave your kids at home. And I was like, well,
check it out.
I'll still, And he's like, you were right.
Yeah. Which means don't believe the media. The media distorts stuff, lies. They don't want white people have hope. They don't want white people to gather together and get strength and nourishment and courage. They want white people to feel depressed. They want white people to feel like we've lost, that it's over with. There's nothing they can do about it. And you need to realize that it's not over with. There is much we can do, and you can be a part of it. And you need to come to our conference.
Yeah, young
September
people,
2, 3,
teenagers,
and 4.
Young people, teenagers listening, you know, instead of going to a concert somewhere for the weekend, you know, get your friends and drive out here and meet other people and relax and enjoy yourself and get some news, you know, learn something about this resistance that you can be a part of.
Yeah, be a soldier for White Christian Revival. I don't mean a soldier like you might think, but I mean be a spokesman, a light, take carry a message to your friends. And you know, you want to be somebody that's stepping out of the ordinary and be somebody different. This is your opportunity. You want to be revolutionary in a sense. You want to change the world and change the future of America. You can come here and be a part of that awakening.
Absolutely.
So, well, Rachel, Jason, we only got a couple minutes. I want to mention real quickly the White Christian Heritage Festival in Pulaski, Tennessee. That's on October 24th. I believe the date, the fourth Saturday of October. So that's something to start looking forward to. Mark your calendar on that. And in the meantime, of course, is the Faith and Freedom Conference.
Yeah, and I do want to remind everybody really quick, the summer newspaper distribution is ongoing, our summer edition of the Crusader newspaper. You need to get your orders in.
We still have papers?
We still have some papers. There's not a whole lot of them left. We still have some. They are $49 for 100 copies. That includes the postage and everything. So get your orders in. Get those newspapers. There's a lot of ways that you can distribute those. It needs to go out into your community. Don't think that just because everybody's got the internet, they don't need to have a newspaper. The newspapers are great to give to people, to leave in areas. Also, very, very important to send to local media, law enforcement agencies, schools, other public entities, and so forth. That's how the local media and city officials know that there is a white resistance in their community. That helps put them in touch with us, which helps give us the opportunity to speak a message of white Christian revival and white resistance in your area on your local news, TV channel, newspaper, or whatever. That helps give it a local directive to this white resistance, not just something that's going on here or somewhere else, but helps drive it home to your community. And that's what the benefit of local literature distribution is in your community.
Right, because a lot of those reporters, the assumption that all the reporters are working against you, though a lot of reporters, a lot of people in the media are just as concerned about what's happening to our country as you are. And they like the opportunity to be able to focus on the Knights and be able to help take our message to the population.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, I think we're all done here, Rachel and Jason. So until next time, this is Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
Rachel Pendergraft.
And we're just reminding you to love your God and to love your people.